Welcome to the Fantasy Golf Insider Podcast Tour Championship Edition. Be sure to check us out, fantasygolfinsider.com. Of course, I'm Jeff Bergerson, joined as always by Zachary Turcotte.
How's it going, my friend?
It's going very well. I do not have hand, foot, and mouth disease, so I am living life right now. Be sure, everybody, check us out. I know it's the Tour Championship, but we have like a 2 weeks off before the next event. So be sure to join us. Get all of the information you need, research, tools, articles each and every week to be a winning and profitable DFS, golf player, better, you name it. We have it on our site for the most reasonable in the industry. So check us out today, fantasygolfinsider.com. Also, footballinsideredge.com, our football site, as football is rapidly approaching. We have tons of information there. We put in tons of time into that, just like we do the golf site. We do articles each and every week. We got showdown articles. We have GPP articles. We have cash game articles. Now it seems like a guy is going down with an injury every other day during the preseason here. So it's huge to stay on top of things. And be sure to join us at footballinsideredge.com for all of your football needs. Zachary, we will talk about the 30-man field at Eastlake for the Tour Championship, but let's first talk about the BMW Championship last week. And obviously the headline is Scottie Scheffler not feeling well, having hand, foot, and mouth disease, which is, and you can talk about it, it's not very good. And he had it early in the week, so a lot of talking points on this one. A, why wasn't it reported by anybody? Why can't we have some sort of PGA enforced reporting on injuries? And then also, Scotty, I mean, geez, this is heavily contagious. He could pass it on to someone, ruin their season, impact their career, their livelihood. What the hell?
Yeah, it's pretty wild. I didn't know about it, and he didn't talk about it until after the tournament night. Didn't see the interview. I was, watching the coverage yesterday afternoon, so they didn't really cut to his interview or even talk about it. And I wasn't looking too closely on Twitter today, but yeah, they're just catching up here later in the day. I see the interview that he gave. Sounds like he came down with it on Monday of last week, and it usually takes 7 to 10 days kind of clear the system. And if you're an adult, that can linger even longer. I imagine being an athlete in pretty good shape, but that certainly helps, but definitely explains the struggle. As far as the opening round, because he was 4 under through like 7 holes and it was a disaster. He was all the way at the bottom of the board. At that point, I actually was looking online. I was thinking, oh man, this is the opportunity we're looking for. What are the odds he comes back and gets a top five finish? You know what it was? Even when he was in last place, right, the odds of a top five finish were still +375.
Yeah, that's insane.
No, I don't think so. That still sucks. And he still climbed back to, he finished 12th, but yeah, I was like, 3.75 to 1. He's coming from last place to top five, that's not tempting. I was hoping it'd be like, 10 to one. I mean, anything at all to make it compelling, but it was not. So, so he said that he got sick Monday. He was, starting to feel good by the weekend, but I got hand, foot, and mouth. Here's what he said. I got hand, foot, and mouth. So you get blisters on your hands and in your throat and on your feet. So to start the week, it was pretty painful to grip the club. If I was smarter, maybe I would have pulled out, but I was playing so good. I felt like I could knock it out quickly and just get through the first couple rounds. I would still have a chance, but I think that's part of my stubbornness, probably. It's probably a strength of mine and a weakness at times. Like, I've never been one to ever pull out of a tournament, especially in the middle of it. That's really frustrating for me, so I definitely didn't want to do that going into this week, even though it was suggested. But I'm proud of how I fought. Feel like I'm starting to heal up. My throat is still bugging me pretty good. But my hands feel normal today. I actually almost caught myself shaking hands with Cam on 18. Would have felt really bad. I was like, oh my gosh, I almost forgot. So that's good news. Starting to feel better. Hopefully the throat will clear up in the next couple of days. Kind of clownish,
actually. I mean, it all goes back to why can't we get reporting? Why is it not mandated by the PGA? Now, I get that these guys are independent contractors. There's no collective bargaining. There's none of that, right? It's not a team deal. However, the PGA obviously knows that betting on golf and DFS is a large percentage of their viewers, right? And we want this information. So to not require it, and even more so, is it's not even like a team sport where that information is actually important to opponents, right? Yes. Knowing a guy has an injury is helpful to the other team in golf. What the hell does it help?
Right. As if the players are going to change their game or play differently, knowing that Scotty is a little bit impaired. Yeah. I think it's frustrating. If I were the guys who were out there playing with him, I'd probably be pretty irritable.
Well, sure. Absolutely.
That's kind of just a little bit, maybe, and who knows, maybe he told those guys,
maybe he did.
I would think Scotty would have the class to disclose that, but still highly, highly contagious. Like, you could really fuck up your week for something. Because if you get hit with that day one and two during the tournament, you're probably done. I mean, that's it. And sure, then with Scotty
guys who are not as financially set as a Scotty or a Rory, guys who are, you know, trying to make a great deal of money, career changing in the next week or so.
And it wouldn't have mattered for Scotty's positioning going into the final week anyways. So he was already set to go. It's so crazy. And I mean, I guess I'm glad I didn't write him up, because just based on price, it's been our play for pretty much all season has been to fade him at that price. And so, so I felt fortunate to not have gone back
for us.
Still very frustrating for gamblers and for fantasy players last week. I thought, well, that sure would have been great to know. And it's something that could be done in like a 2-minute interview. You're walking up to the course early in the week and, hey, anything to disclose health-wise? Nope, feeling good, feeling great. And that's going to be, 90% of the time. But yeah, what would it have hurt for, somebody to have talked to Scotty for a couple minutes? He say, I got, hand, foot, and mouth. And I mean, it's just such a simple thing to improve the viewing experience and the DFS. And
what's the argument against it, I guess, is my thing.
I can't think of anything. I can't think of a good reason why that shouldn't be disclosed, or why it would be a problem, I guess, if it were disclosed. But so I don't know. He says he's feeling good now. So interesting piece of information to have going into this next week. He's got another few days to recover. So I guess I would assume he'll be back 100%, which definitely makes things more interesting for this week. But yeah, it's just kind of typical of the PGA. They don't quite do everything that they could do to maximize the viewing experience for the consumer. They never really have. So I guess I'm not anticipating that anything will change. I don't even really know why the players would fight it, to be honest. Like, would there be players that would have a blowback? Maybe they would. These guys are so temperamental sometimes. You just never really know what's gonna set off a guy like Scotty or Rory or Morikawa, or, like the littlest stuff. Oh, what an imposition to have to talk to a reporter or a doctor for 2 minutes, checking in each week before the tournament to, give an update on my health. And it's weird too, because the PGA was so hyper conservative over the dumbest stuff during COVID. These guys are playing outside, and they're completely freaked out about somebody passing on COVID to somebody else, which was, the likelihood was just about zero in that circumstance. But something like that, hand, foot, and mouth, which is highly, highly contagious, they totally shrug up the shoulders at this point. It's just a lot of silliness. So kind of an interesting note for last week for anybody who didn't catch that. But I guess it doesn't even really matter too much now going into this week.
No, Scotty's still priced up on DraftKings. He's 14,000. He's still the clear betting favorite. I guess I'm not real interested. I haven't bet him all year, so why start now? I haven't owned him much, if at all, this season either. So I think I'll just stay away, especially at that price of 14,000 in a 30-player field. You know, if you're trying to differentiate, it's not real easy this week with only 30 players. So,
right. So yeah, once you go 14,000 on Scotty, that's going to pin you into at least, sure, you know, a couple guys that are in the 6K range. I guess maybe you could get away with one 6K player and then the rest in the 7K range, but there's just not that many guys that are in the, there's like eight guys, nine guys in the 7K range. So all of those teams are going to look almost identical in if you end up building that way. And that's fine. You know, I don't think that there's that's necessarily a terrible thing this week. It's just it gets a lot trickier to differentiate your player pool if you do end up owning, and you're gonna have to own a lot of Scotty because he will have plenty of ownership this week, especially in a 30-man field. So if you want to get leverage on him, you're probably gonna have to own 50 or 60% Scotty if you want to get really nice leverage over everybody else, because he's probably gonna come in at what, 30-40%, something like that this week?
Yeah, for sure. Over 25. So
Over, especially in a 30-man field. Yep. You know? So yeah, so that's a real challenge when you're putting together your lineups. And yeah, it's interesting with the shift last week, you know, because Scotty comes out and blows away the field at Memphis. Rory is just completely out of it, and then Rory comes to life the next week, which is just a total Rory thing to do, with a third place finish. And now you're coming into East Lake, where Rory has won several times in his career and seems to be awake coming into this last event. So it definitely, the results from last week got a lot more interesting. Player of the year, I mean, Wyndham Clark gets another huge win. Outside of a little stretch overseas, and then his first event back, he's been outstanding the last few months. Man, it looked like he was going to choke it away yesterday. Boy, I haven't seen a guy who's been so ice cold for 15 holes and then completely turn it around, go birdie, birdie, birdie on the end. And then Rory obviously, you know, implodes on the par five on 17 to, you know, give Wyndham a nice gap there for the win. But boy, what a season for Wyndham Clark. That guy has just been fantastic over the last few months.
So it was a fun event. Having an outright on Wyndham the way it started, I was like, yep, this is about right.
Yeah, here we go.
This is about right. This seems fitting. But luckily he held on. Pretty good price on him last week.
Yeah, I mean, in a smaller field, getting a guy who's won twice in the last few months at, what was it, 33-1, I think it was?
33, yeah. Yep. Yeah,
that's not bad at all, especially for a player of his caliber. When he's on, he's just about as good as anybody in the world. And so, it was a pretty impressive victory, and it was a decent watch. I mean, it ended up being a pretty nice course, I thought. Pretty moderate in terms of the challenge. Not easy by any stretch, but not extreme on the difficulty measure either. I thought it was kind of right in the middle. There were enough areas where guys could find their way into trouble if they were imprecise off the tee or on approach that made it compelling. And it was a great leaderboard up at the top there. You know, Wyndham Clark, Rory's in it. And we talked about Patrick Cantlay. The guy just turns it on every year once the playoffs arrive. Did it again.
The money man.
Yeah, I think that is true. You just look at his history the last 5-6 years in the playoffs, and it doesn't matter what kind of form he comes in. Once the big money is on the line, he definitely finds another level. And he's doing it again this year. So that was a pretty impressive finish. Morikawa, he played really well. We haven't really talked a lot about him in recent weeks. He had kind of a hot stretch earlier in the year and then cooled off a little bit in recent months. But, you know, the irons definitely look sharp for him. So that was interesting to see, especially coming into this last week. Goddard up was great again. I guess I should have probably paid a little more attention to him on a, you know, longer, tougher course with a guy where he's extremely good off the tee. And good as far as his long irons go. So, plenty of guys that showed up for the week, gave us a decent amount of star power there at the top.
Let's talk about this week's event, the Tour Championship. We know the course. It's East Lake. Like we'd said, it's 30 guys. The course itself is 7,400 yards, par 70. It's a Donald Ross design. There have been renovations in the past years. Reese Jones, George Cobb. The fairways are on the average to narrower side. The rough is generally usually kept pretty long for this tournament. There is some water on the course, on eight holes to be precise. We go back to TIFF Eagle Bermuda this week, and the greens are 6,200 square feet on average in size. It's kind of a risk-reward course, I like to say, because there's plenty of birdies out there. But again, I wouldn't compare it to TPC Twin Cities, but in the likes that there is a lot of water, there's a lot of birdies to be had, but also double bogeys, it is kind of like that. I compare it to a lot of the southern courses that we see with the narrower fairways, like Harbor Town, Copperhead. But what is your list of comp courses this week, Zachary?
I've got Colonial, I've got Innisbrook, Olympia Field, Southwind, Quail Hollow, Riviera, PGA National, and Caves Valley.
Okay. All right. Pricing, we already mentioned Scotty is up top at 14,000. I think that rules him out of my core. But then we have Rory at 11,000, Xander 10,000, who let me down. He was super disappointing last week. I thought that was a really good week for him to put up a top five with a possible win, and he just absolutely laid an egg. And Oberg was just about as bad. So what do we do up top? And then we can even add Wyndham at 9,400. Can he repeat? Can he play well this week? What are you doing up here?
Oh, man. Yeah, I know. It gets really tough. I've been talking some people through their championship events this week because there's a lot on the line for people who are in league play. Yep. And I think just price alone will probably keep Scotty out of my lineup or out of my main write-up for the week. Now, it's not to say you can't play him. He's been really pretty fantastic all season, despite the fact that he hasn't been able to close and he's had a ton of second place finishes. The numbers are overwhelmingly good for him on the season. I don't typically follow Brandel Chambly all that often today, but he gave a pretty good breakdown on, you know, the arguments for player of the year. And here, let me just pull up some of these stats. It says, since it is a vote of the players, some subjectivity will creep into the vote, but there are several objective ways to define who has been the best, who has had the best year on the PGA Tour in 2026. Number one, adjusted scoring average, adjusted for course and strength of field. Scheffler leads with 68.654, almost 0.7 strokes better than second place McIlroy. Number two, scoring average, actual, no adjustments made. So favors those who play easier courses. Scheffler again leads with 67.96, more than one stroke better than Jake Knapp's 68.98. Number three, strokes gained total. Scheffler leads with 2.263, almost 0.8 of a stroke better than Matt Fitzpatrick. Number four, FedEx Cup points. Scheffler has 4,986, some 1,500 points more than Fitzpatrick. Number five, world ranking points for 2026. Scheffler has gained 468.64, some 166 points more than Cam Young in 2026, and 155 more than Wyndham Clark. And last, money. Scheffler has won $20,937,000, some $6.5 million more than Cam Young. Objectively, it is not much of a conversation as to who has had the best year in 2026 on the PGA Tour. So, yeah, kind of compelling as far as, like, the numbers, even without all the wins.
He hasn't even – I've heard a lot of conversations about player of the year.
Right. Yeah.
And he's not even up there. It's been, you know, Fitzpatrick, Wyndham Clark, Cam Young.
Just counting on wins and big wins and majors and those types of things. Yeah, Scotty probably will have to win this week.
Yeah.
To claim it since he's only got the two wins this season. And one was the Amex, which is, you know, one of the weaker fields that you see in the main part of the season each year. So he probably needs a win, but yeah, playing wise, you just look at those numbers and it kind of blows you away. It really does put into perspective just how consistently well Scotty plays at just about every single event. each year. So if you do play Scotty, I can't blame you. It just limits your options a little bit because it'll leave you with 36,000 for the other five players, which is 7,200 per player. There are some guys, obviously, that you can play in the 6K range. Although it's pretty risky if you end up loading up on a couple of those guys that finish kind of near the bottom. You have to have Scotty win for sure. But that, you know, that's probably the case anyway. Whoever you end up on your team, you probably have to find the winner for
a GPP. No question. There's absolutely
30 guys there. So if you do feel convinced that it's going to be Scotty winning it this week and walking off with it, then, you know, go with Scotty. But I just like to fire more bullets. I'd rather just drop down to somebody like Rory. Because you can make such a good lineup out of that, you know. Then maybe you go grab Adam Scott, and then the rest of the guys are stars,
who are capable of winning.
Exactly. Yeah. You look at like getting a guy like Morikawa at 8,100 in there. You know, you've got Victor Hovland at like 7,300. Oh, you could play Victor with Scotty either way.
Sam Burns.
Exactly. I mean, you know, Fitz has been hot through much of the season, even though he's kind of cooled off. Henley and Hideki right there in the mid sevens. And then, yeah, I mean, if you start with Rory, you very easily can fit a guy like Wyndham Clark, you know. Then, so if you go Rory Wyndham right there, then you've given yourself a great opportunity with a guy who's been extremely good at this course and a guy who's playing some of the best golf in the world right now. So I kind of prefer that approach of being able to lock in many guys that I think have the possibility of winning, as opposed to if you do a Scotty lineup, you're really saying one guy that I think has a shot of winning, and then you're hoping maybe the other five could maybe be in contention.
I'm going to go back to Xander. I don't know why.
Pretty decent course history here.
Of course.
Eight starts, no finish worse than seventh. I know. And then he's got obviously the win back in 2017. And even first and seventh and his last six have been top fives with three runner-up finishes. So he's just been absolutely dominant at this course throughout his career. Although, you know, this season's been a challenge for him, to say the least. Every time you kind of think he's ready to make a little bit of a run, like last week, not so great. You know, it was a pretty disappointing finish after having back-to-back top tens coming in. But 10,000, that's not a bad price at all, given his consistency. And what I love there is, He doesn't have to win there at 10K. You know, if he finishes second or fourth or something like that, as he has over and over again, you can still find the winner in one of these other players there, and he could definitely still be a part of a winning GPP lineup without having to win. Whereas I think Scotty has to win in order to be on the winning GPP lineup.
It is going to be super difficult to be contrarian this week and not duplicate other people's lineups and try and win a GPP outright.
Yeah.
A couple ways you can do it. We can leave money on the table, right? Leave $500, $600, $700 left over, or we could do some stacking with guys who we know are going to be under owned. One thing that helped me last week is I targeted Robert McIntyre. I knew absolutely no one would own him. He was owned by like 2% in GPPs. Unfortunately, I had him, I had Cantlay, but I had Xander and Oberg. Let me down because the McIntyre call was huge. And we need to look for guys who are going to be neglected this week.
Sure.
Do you think Cam Young might be overlooked in that 8K range, Zachary, not having done anything in quite some time?
I mean, it's almost impossible for a guy to be overlooked in this field.
I mean he's not going to be 2%, but do you think he'll be lower?
Overlooked is going to be 15-20% for him.
Right.
If you're the real area where you're probably differentiating is going to be in the sixes. I mean, I guess if you look at that, I would say right there in that range. I mean, you know, Tommy won here a year ago. He sucked last week, but the win last year could still get him some attention and his price drop. Cantlay has been really hot. And he's had pretty good success here, especially in recent years at this event. he's going to have owners. Morikawa was hot last week, and he's had some nice finishes here. Goddard played well last week. So that whole range of guys will definitely be heavily owned. Young may be slightly lesser owned than some of those other names that I just mentioned right there. But
I don't see anyone that's going to be overlooked there, do you?
No, not really. Maybe Fitzpatrick at 7,800.
Yeah, that was another name I was going to mention too. Yeah.
You know, not much for history here. A couple times that he's been here, 15th and 9th, so nothing too amazing. He's cooled off pretty considerably since a third place finish in Scotland. He missed the cut at the Open, which crushed a lot of people, and then 12th at the St. Jude, which is fine. That's not bad. And then 28th last week, certainly disappointing. So based on those starts there, he certainly seems like a candidate.
And his tee to green game has been not very good either. So
yeah, so he could be one that is fading. And yeah, I have a hard time going to him with the game the last couple of weeks. This is such a part of the year where momentum plays such a huge key. We've just seen it pretty much every year. We've covered this tournament going all the way back to Billy Horschel, 2014, just getting red hot out of nowhere and winning it. And you know, obviously Jordan Spieth had the fantastic season in 2015 and was dominant. So you just tend to see guys who just get hot and then continue to do so. But if guys are kind of on the colder side, then, you know, unfortunately that does also tend to be a little bit of a trend there. So the 7Ks get kind of interesting. You know, Siwoo Kim has had a very good year. This hasn't been an event he's played in all that much. 20th here a few years ago. A little bit of a disappointing finish for him, finishing 33rd last week after being priced way, way up, which I felt fortunate that I was able to avoid him there. Hideki, you know, you would think this would be a good Hideki course.
I said that in my column this week. I'm like, I would think this would be a really good Hideki course, but it really hasn't.
No, he's never been in contention here, which is a little concerning. And he definitely finally fell back a little bit this past week. Started slowly at the BMW and worked his way back a little bit, but still a little bit of a disappointing finish after 4 straight top 10s and 6 straight top 15 finishes there. You know, obviously things were not going great for him at the end of last season, but he finished 29th, and he's had a few finishes here of outside the top 25 over the last decade. So that's a tricky one there. They priced him just right there. 7,600 is, boy, that's so tempting. You know, just seeing him in the top 10 at TPC Southwind a couple of weeks ago.
Yep.
Makes that, he could really go either direction there. And then you drop down and you got a guy like Russell Henley at 7,500, who people probably haven't been on quite as much. But then he's a guy who's from, you know, he's from Georgia, played his college golf there, and he's been really very good here. And all four of his starts over the last decade, 3 top 5 finishes.
Putts well on Bermuda.
Right. Yeah. So he could be a little bit sneaky. He hasn't been in contention much. But yeah, coming back to Georgia could be the spot to get back to him. So I like that. I do tend to like guys who have a fair amount of experience. Experience does tend to, as we've seen at the top, you know, Scotty, Rory, Xander, all with excellent, excellent history. And that just seems like it builds on itself, you know. So then you come down and you see a guy like Cantlay, you see a guy like Henley there. I do tend to gravitate towards those players who have a lot of experience at this event. They're not going to be rattled. It's not like some, and I'm sure one or two of these rookies will maybe play well, but it's also got to be a big sigh of relief. It's just qualifying for this event, being in the top 30, gets you into so many events next year, gets you into a bunch of the majors, gets you into, you know, obviously you're already into all the signature events, you know, you're getting a pretty nice payday coming out of here. So I feel like there's for some of the guys who just barely make it in at kind of near the bottom, there's maybe a little bit of a sigh of relief. Like they're happy to be here, but they maybe aren't necessarily thinking that they're going to be in contention at all at the bottom. So that's why I try to typically sort of minimize my exposure to first timers that are in the lower dollar range this week.
I agree. I would say that nobody is really an out for me. I would not say I'm completely out on anyone in this field necessarily, yeah. Because even some of the guys who I'm not too keen of their current form, like Alex Fitzpatrick or right. Ryan Fox or who else, Minwoo Lee. I mean, at yeah. their price though,
sure.
It allows you to do a lot up top. I mean, you could, if you wanted to, do a Rory Xander stack, and you're still left with 7,200. That's not bad yeah. at all.
Yeah. Yeah, you could get there. Let's see. Could you even do...
You could do Rory Xander Burns and be left with 6,600.
Yeah, it's not bad. I suppose it gets kind of crazy to try to do Scotty and Rory. They give you 25,000 for four. So you have like 6,250. I guess, yeah, you could make one possible team out of that. You could go Scotty, Rory, and then Smalley, Fitz, Batia, and Fox for a team. So there is, that's one team I think that you could end up making right there.
And
there
will be a lot of those.
maybe one other. Maybe if you went to Wright, and yeah, you could probably get Wright in there for that too. But yeah, that's still going to be very, very limited for a Scotty yeah. Rory stack. And I don't like that because you'd need them to go 1-2 basically. Yes. And then have the other guys have somebody among that other group be at least somewhat up into contention as well. So yes, I guess you couldn't do that, but yeah, every other stack really is on the table up at the top. You could get two or three of those guys. They're in there. In fact, my placeholder lineup, I was able to start with a couple of them and really have no problem. I only had to dive into the 6K range for one of my players for that placeholder lineup that I built so far.
Even like if you did a Xander, Burns, Gotterup, Morikawa, Henley, Hovland.
Yeah. Yeah. Having Hovland down there at
7,300
gives you a lot of options, even though, you know, he won here in 2023. Kind of mixed the other results. He has one of their top five, and then the other ones are kind of middling results. But we know Hovland has the talent to jump up and win an event like this. He's done it in the past, and we know his talent. That's why I'd rather play a guy like, you know, you get into that range there, and you got like Gerard, Hovland, Spahn, McIntyre, Bridgman. I mean, Hovland just jumps off the page to me as the guy that I would be betting on or that I'd want on my fantasy squad for the weekend. It's not to say those other guys couldn't do well, but none of them really have in their career. And none of them have ever really shown themselves to be anywhere near the sort of player that Hovland is. So he's definitely the big play for me. And then dropping down in the 6K range, not a lot of names that I love here, but pretty easy for me to sprinkle in some guys. Like I think Tom Kim is playable. I love Adam Scott at 6,500. Boy, that seems like a fantastic price for him there. He's been really good throughout the season. He's got at least 10 top 25s or so, 10, probably more than that. Back-to-back top 20s coming into the playoffs. And he's had three top 10s over the last decade here. And he's playing extremely well. The irons have been fantastic for him. So I think he's probably my favorite there. Do you think you could play a little Gary Woodland at 66?
He's one of my favorites in the 6K range. I don't trust him necessarily. Yeah. From week to week, he's been very difficult to predict. He's been very up and down.
Very up and down. But yeah.
You look at a guy like right around him, Minwoo Lee has not been good. Wrighton at 64, you know, you talk about experience. He has none.
Hasn't contended for a while.
No. Right.
Smalley, I think I like Smalley at 63.
That's fair.
Yep. He seems like, you know, he was red hot in the beginning to the middle of the year and then ice cold for a while again. But it seems like these last three events, 7th at the Wyndham, 24th in Memphis, 16th last week. That's not bad. That's encouraging. So I think he might be one, and he's a guy who tends to play pretty well in this part of the country. So, I like that. He's my favorite play among those bottom few guys down there. He'd probably be the one that I would still pick. Maybe you could have a little bit of Akshay, He's another one. He's all over the place. He's either been really good or really bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you know, at 6,100, if he gets you a 10th place or something like that, that might be enough with considering the other players that that would allow you to afford there. So I could see sprinkling a little bit there.
Let's talk a little bit about, is this a good event to bet on?
There are
1, 2, 3, 4, really. 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 guys at 22-1 or less.
Right. So you really got to just pick a couple guys to make your outrights on. But if you mean, if you look at historically, it's been pretty top heavy for the winners. When was the last time somebody just won this thing out of nowhere? Probably Xander back in 2017, right? His first trip there. And he'd had a pretty good season already. But I mean, that was probably the last real surprise winner that I can think of. You know,
what were Hovland's odds in 2023? I don't remember.
I mean, he was playing pretty well, I think, by that
point. Was he going into it?
So I can't imagine it was super long. I mean, at worst, what, maybe 20? Right. Maybe 20-1? 25? I mean, they hadn't maybe tightened them down quite as much yet, but that would have been, I don't know about where they were. But yeah, you just look at recent winners. Tommy, you weren't getting long odds there. Scotty, Rory, 3 times. Cantlay, Hovland, you know. Xander back in 2017. Yeah, that would have been about it. Tigers win back when that was, what, 2018 was that when Tiger won? Yeah. So yeah, there haven't been very many events where we've seen some nobody or some no name come up and just shock everybody for a win. So yeah, and that, just from that standpoint alone, I would say it's not a great betting week. I just bring it down to 2-3 names.
Yeah.
Go 2-3x on some of those days. So if you really think it's a Scotty week, maybe you just pick 2 guys and go like 4x on Scotty, you know, or 4x on Rory. Something like that. Cause if you're making 6 bets this week and most of the guys are inside of 20-1.
Yeah.
Real hard to be extremely profitable.
Yeah.
Placing those types of bets over
time. I did lock in Tom Kim this morning at 50-1.
That's not bad. You know, I think that's reasonable. And just as far as looking at what he's been able to do with his approach game, you know, maybe sliding back a little bit this last week, but still pretty hot over the last 3 months overall. So
it was really only his first round on Thursday, which was pretty bad. I think he was a couple over. After that, he was pretty solid.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he made it back up to 28th. So that wasn't terrible. The trend line is still pretty good for him, I would say. But yeah, we just don't see those guys win often enough for me to feel comfortable, even if I am getting a decent number on them.
So we have a couple of weeks off of golf before the, put this on your calendar, Bitmore Championship Asheville.
Yeah, there you go. That's
on September 17th.
Yep.
So only 2 weeks until that kicks off. Then we have the President's Cup. So
I'm guessing that that event will actually have a decent showing as far as the players, because what we saw last year was the one event for the Ryder Cup. Quite a few of the star players showed up just so they could, you know, not be completely away from it for, you know, an extended stretch. And I think that's probably smart. So, yeah, I do think that one event will have a decent show. Now, whether or not those guys are, I imagine after this event, they probably will take some time. So they might come in and they might just use that event entirely as a warm up to kind of get loose for the President's Cup. But
no Silverado this year.
Yeah. Yeah. They worked that one off the schedule, which is kind of too bad.
It's the Bank of Utah. And then a bunch of the guys do head over to Japan then. Because I think Xander won that event last year, didn't he, in Japan?
That sounds correct.
What is that? I don't even know what that one's called. Then you got Bermuda and then Mexico.
Yeah, two Mexico events.
Two Mexicos,
They took our advice and put them back to back, which I think is smart.
Yep.
You still have the RSM in
there. RSM in November, yep.
Got the Hero in December, which is the smaller field, but that's
something called the Good Championship.
don't know what that
really? Is that what we're doing from the Omni Barton Creek in Texas? The good, good. Okay.
So it's got to be a new one for us.
And that's our fall lineup.
Oh, that is interesting. Yeah. So what do we got? One, two, three. Yeah, Bay Current is over in Japan. Butterfield, Bermuda. That's what we do each year. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Yeah, so we've got 8 full field events in the fall. It is interesting. Yeah. I did hear, it sounds like the PGA Tour is trying to work with the DP World Tour to promote some bigger events in the fall beginning in 2028. So I think they're trying to maybe get the PGA guys to participate in some of those big worldwide events.
That would be smart.
Yeah, it would. We see the European guys go over, you know, Rory and Tommy and a lot of those other guys, they go and play in those events. It would be smart if they could work out, you know, some good TV deals to make those events a little bit more prominent, just to keep eyes from drifting away entirely. They've already got plenty of money in those prize pools. It's really just a matter of getting the U.S. guys to pick up their clubs and play a little bit into the fall.
Doesn't it seem or feel easy to you?
Yeah.
I gotta figure this shit out.
Little things like that. Yeah, like incentivize, like just coming together in order to get those guys to play. Yeah, I can't see where any downside would be. But yeah, I mean, the problem is that there's so much money. Like if you look at a guy like Scotty, who's, you know, potentially going to walk away with, I mean, if he wins this week, it's just kind of insane the amount of winnings that
40 million this year
that he'll end up with. Is that, I'm trying to think if that's, so it'd be like his first place 20. It looks like it was 10 last year for Tommy, but I'm not sure what it is this year, but that's the thing. It's like they really, guys like Scotty, they don't need to play in the fall. They just, you look at his endorsement deals, which I'm sure are off the charts. Like, you know, he could be out there playing more, but does he care if he makes another $10 million, or would he rather just spend that time with his kids and with his family in the off season? So there really doesn't need to be much of a push.
So what do you say he was at? He was at 20 some million.
Yep.
Okay. So another 10 to top prize of the FedEx Cup champion. So he'd be at 30 some.
Yeah, exactly. So he feel pretty comfortable, I guess, taking off in the fall. So yeah, I don't know how they'll incentivize those guys. Maybe they'll find a way to bring the points into the entire season, something like that, or mandate that they have to play in two or three of them at least, you know, something like that. Although, you know, they didn't hold Rory to it this year of needing to play 15 events. So I highly doubt that anything that they do would be too restrictive, but I was interested in seeing. I mean, I think 2028 is going to be really interesting. I'm very interested to see what that schedule turns out to be. I think it will be completely different than what we see here today. And it actually kind of feels like they're going to implement a lot of the sort of changes that we were hoping for. So you have some weeks off of where they're just not playing big tournaments that gives everybody a chance to rest, and then making sure that all of the big names show up for the vast majority of the big events. You're going to have cuts. Sounds like maybe match play to decide the championship, which I think would be fantastic. I mean, how cool would that be this week if you played like the first two rounds of regular golf and then you took the last 16 on Saturday and Sunday, and then you just did match play to see who ended up being the winner? I think that would be a pretty fantastic way of doing it.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
So I think that'd be an interesting change that I think they're kind of contemplating a little bit. There's a lot of really good things on the horizon. I think it'd be interesting to see how the LIV Tour winds up. They had their last event this past weekend, and I think they found a new investor. Can you even imagine coming into that thing at this point and wanting to throw more money at it? No. I don't get it. I mean, if you're the Saudis had just an unlimited amount of cash to throw at it,
and they ran out.
They left after a few years and couldn't be profitable. And now you are going to, I mean, what are you going to do coming in as an investor? I mean, the only way you're going to make money on it is by dramatically cutting your costs.
Yeah.
Which I would think would mean dramatically cutting your purses for the players. That's the only way that you're able to keep that thing going with any sort of shot at making any money. So, I don't know. This would be a really interesting offseason to see if they...
And the intrigue is gone.
Right.
But the intrigue at first, you had all of these guys just... leaving.
Who's leaving next? Who's going to go? Right. What's this team thing going to be like? But nobody cares now. Like we've said over and over, nobody cares about the team aspect of
it. No. And you've had guys, it sucks so bad that they're leaving it.
Yeah.
What are you going to do differently?
Yeah, I have no idea what they could change. The only thing they could do is dramatically cut costs, but otherwise it just feels like they're throwing good money after bad to try to keep this thing going. And then if they lose Bryson or Rahm, either of those guys really, that's kind of the tipping point. Although it's kind of like what Rory said, and I think Rory he's kind of an ass. He's like, well, they haven't been able to bring eyes to the LIV tour. Well, that's kind of true. Nobody's been able to bring eyes to the LIV tour. It's just isn't something at this point. I mean, they've had decent attendance at their events. It sounded like they had a lot of folks that were there. I think they do pretty well on the international side, but TV wise, it's just dead. People just aren't interested. They're not tuning in at all. And if there's no TV money in it, then there's no money in it. So yeah, it'd be a fun offseason to see how that comes together and what they're able to put together for 2027.
Before we wrap up, you want to talk a couple minutes on football? Anything striking you? I mentioned earlier, the injuries seem to be mounting already in August.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like, I saw last night that Ashton Jeanty had to leave the field not under his own power, which everybody freaked out.
So you want to know something? You want to know something funny on that? Best ball drafts are going like constantly.
Yeah, they are.
But every minute, right?
He plummeted. So, yeah,
there were best ball drafts, and I was in one last night. It wasn't exactly when the news hit, but I've read about some situations where that news hit and Jeanty fell to like the eighth or ninth round,
right?
Because it was fear that he was out for the season.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So now you have teams. I'm not sure. So I've had a couple of drafts on DraftKings where they have made it null and void, the league.
Oh, wow.
They've just said, we're not going to allow this because we view that there was collusion or something.
Yeah.
Unbalanced. And I don't think that's necessarily the case in this situation, but it is something to have Ashton Jeanty as a ninth round pick on some of these best ball teams.
Which, that's kind of the draw with best ball is having the best information at the moment that these drafts take place and being able to take a little bit of risk too. Like, I don't know why a league like that would have to get thrown out because you're going into it knowing there's been a severe injury, but we don't know how severe. See a change. And it's for somebody, they're taking a little bit of a risk in drafting him. And maybe it pays off and maybe it doesn't. And that's when people play 100 or 200 drafts or however many drafts that they do. That's part of the equation. It's part of the fun, I think. So I don't know why they would have to necessarily invalidate it. And I was explaining that. I know your daughter and my daughter are in a fantasy football league together this year. I'm not sure if you were aware of that or not, but mine was showing me her team last night and I was looking over her league and
how's it look? Team.
I was like, you look a little weak here, but then that news rolled across. Oh, Ashton Jeanty cert. I said, well, does anybody have Mike Washington in your league? Nope. Okay. Now you are going to put in a waiver claim immediately to try to get him onto your team. Oh, okay. And you just have to hope that priority, the whoever has them isn't paying attention, which they're a bunch of dumb high school kids, so they're probably not. Then you'll get them on your team, and then maybe you've got a starting running back for the entire season that, that's totally been overlooked. So she did get him in the waiver priority there, which is good because he's still probably going to be out. I mean, it is a pretty high ankle sprain. That can knock a guy out for 6 weeks. I mean, we've seen that all the time. And even when you come back, that's not a quick healing injury.
That's the tough part. Like, if you right. own him and he plays, that might even be worse because yes. he might be ineffective. But
playing. Yeah, that's what I was saying. I was like, that makes it even harder to draft. Yeah. At least if he was out, you know, yeah, then he'd be done. Him. Just get rid yeah. of him, you know. But now trying to figure him out going into best ball drafts, well, how severe is that ankle sprain? Now you really do have to evaluate it because he could still be a mid-round pick or a late-round pick. All dependent on just how severe that sprain is and what his timeline looks like coming back. But yeah, so that was a big one.
Back to the second round, I will report because I saw it tonight. But
yeah, which is I think still very risky, and especially being on the Raiders, right? I mean, that's certainly not an offense that I'm targeting this year, because I think it's still a team where you can just zero in on stopping Jeanty and Bowers. And then that's really it. There really isn't anybody else there that I'm fearful of. So I think he's just he's going to get volume if he's healthy, but it's not going to be very efficient
volume. No, and I remember last year CeeDee Lamb struggled with the high ankle sprain, and I remember yes. him saying that there was something he could tell something was wrong.
It bothered right? him
the whole season.
Right. Yeah. That doesn't
even when he quick. Came back, he was not right.
Right. Yeah. So even with him coming back at this point, it'd be interesting. I guess I haven't checked, but it'd be interesting to see what the what some of the season long props look like. I'm sure they're probably down. They're maybe not even posted. And since he won't play in week one, I guess most of them would probably be invalidated. No, anyway. Yeah. So, oh well. But
I saw Trevion Henderson. There's some questions on his status as well. He was another guy.
Oh, is he hurt now too?
Yeah, I saw something come across theirs, and I saw Ramondre Stevenson's average draft position go up quite a bit. I mean, this yeah. stuff is so fluid. It just is coming firing all the time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And depth charts are changing all the time. So if you're doing these, you yeah. have to pull up teams' depth charts because they fluctuate almost daily right now.
Let's see. What is it saying? Trevion Henderson exits practice early after freak incident. Left practice early Monday after slipping on the slick turf of the team's practice field, raising new concerns about his availability for week one, just over 2 weeks away. Lost his footing while attempting to cut through traffic. The lower grass field at the Patriots facility is notably slick, and the second year back was far from the only player who struggled with his footing there. So it looks like a right foot ankle injury issues. I did go to the Vikings preseason game this past Saturday and can report that J.J. McCarthy is still garbage.
you needed to attend the game to see why? Firsthand.
I didn't, but I was. and I was just kind of hoping, hey, you know, he's getting a chance to start, you know, be able to. They've already made the decision now. The pressure should be off a little bit. Let's just see what he can do going up against. I mean, he's with second teamers, so that's not helping him. But it wouldn't have mattered if he would have had anybody else out there. The throws that he missed were just hideous. I mean, did you see any of the highlights or the lowlights, I should say?
I did not. I had a conversation with a guy from Chicago this weekend at an out-of-town baseball tournament, and I was telling him maybe it's just people outside of Minnesota don't understand, yeah. but I was telling him, I said, I don't mind Caleb as a guy and his prospects going forward, and he's like, oh, you'd rather have him than J.J. McCarthy?
Kyler, yeah.
No.
Caleb Williams for the Bears. Yeah, of course not.
This guy was from Chicago.
Yeah.
He's and I said, I'm not very sure that JJ can play in the league, to be honest with you. And he's like, really?
Yeah, he can't. Okay, so it was bad. First play of the game, I believe it's Ty Felton. Was it Felton or Price? One of those guys, they ran a long, about a 15-yard out. Perfect route. Breaks open. JJ zings it over their head, way to the outside, uncatchable, wide open. Misses that right off the bat. Later on, you know, he kind of scrambles through trouble a bit, throws, you know, kind of a jump ball that Felton is able to bring down, you know, and makes it about 50 yards. So that's great. Vikes are like first and goal. They get down to, you know, they get down to like the 3 yard line, and he's got a guy in the back of the end zone, zips it over his head. Then it's fourth down from the 2 yard line. And Miles Price runs a nice little route to the flat. He's wide open. It should just be a quick pitch and catch touchdown. Fires another rocket fastball right over his head. I mean, hideous. I mean, just hideous, hideous pass. And then apparently he was supposed to play even more. So he played into the second quarter. He was supposed to play even longer, but then he was banged up and didn't finish the half. So it's like, which, I mean, that was an issue for him all last season in different ways, different injuries that piled up. So, a terrible effort, really. I mean, a couple passes that were fine that were okay, but the ones that he missed were so egregious. And it's just the same kind of shit that he's been missing, just overthrowing guys, firing, you know, fastballs to guys who are just a few feet away, a few yards away, that where he's just wildly inaccurate, just no touch at all on the football. So that was, and then, you know, Wentz comes in and he's like 9 of 11, 90 some yards, guides him to a score, moves things pretty smoothly with second and third teamers, is composed in the pocket, is making decisions quicker, is throwing the touch passes a lot nicer. I mean, I think that Wentz has got to be the backup at this point. I think JJ is all the way down to third stringer at best, if they even plan on keeping him around. And I heard like the local talk radio guys, they seemed like they were definitely disagreeing if the Vikes should accept a sixth round pick for McCarthy. At this point, if it's a sixth round pick, I would probably.
Who cares?
Yeah. I mean, he's going to be, you could keep him around for development, but if he's going to be your third stringer, how much is he even going to develop by hanging around? He's not going to get any snaps. I guess you could have him out there playing on the scout team or something.
Is KOC going to take any of the blame for this? This was his guy.
It seems like it. Yeah. You'd think that in the evaluation process, they had to know it was going to come down to him or Bo Nix. And you think, did you guys really miss that bad? Like, you guys are the ones that are in there watching film. You're watching technique. You're watching their throwing motion. You guys couldn't have different. I mean, as a casual fan, maybe you don't see it as much. We don't. We're watching the game. But you'd think those experts on it and the QB whisperer would certainly be able to pick up on the kind of mechanics and issues that that McCarthy has had that Nix has really not had. I don't know. No, I mean, McCarthy or KOC doesn't really get blamed for much of anything.
People seem
to think he's a genius, and I just don't. I think he's been a fine head coach, I guess, but I don't know. He doesn't seem like he's able to adjust very well.
No,
he's
been average at best.
Right. Yeah. If he's had any say in the draft, I don't know. I mean, Kwesi was terrible. Glad he's fired, but I can't imagine that KOC had no input in the draft over the last 4 or 5 seasons. So I think some of that's going to fall on his shoulders. A little bit there, and then just the decision between
on the Darnold
keeping Sam versus moving on to JJ. I mean, you had to have seen JJ play enough prior to the season, and you know, and then coming back a little bit from the knee injury. I mean, you had to have seen some of the issues and the problems, but they felt completely comfortable turning it over to him and then not playing him at all,
right?
In the preseason last year, and we're doing that again this year too, which is
so bizarre.
A little silly. I mean, I get it. You want to keep your guys healthy, right? That's fine. But I mean, so Kyler's going to play one series prior to the regular season. Okay. I mean, plenty of other teams have played their star quarterbacks in the preseason. So I don't, I don't see why you wouldn't get Kyler out there for 2-3 series, at least in the first 2 games, just to get them game action. I mean, I know you had the big thing now with the NFL is they have these joint practices, which seem to kind of take the place of having these guys play much in terms of the preseason. But I just don't think it's enough. I think you actually need game action and being out there with these guys a little bit more. But yeah, we'll see. I think it's going to be a rough season for the Vikes. I think they're maybe will win 8 games, but I think they're going to struggle. I think they're going to have injuries with Kyler. I think the backup situation is going to be tricky. I think if JJ does get a chance, there hasn't been any development that I've really seen out of him. So I was all about keeping him around, and then just seeing him play the last 2 weeks again, missing the same types of passes over and over. I think I'm done. I would probably try to salvage whatever value you can get at this point, but yeah, like you said, I don't think he's serviceable as even a backup in the NFL.
No.
And I don't think anybody else is really going to give him that chance anyways. So I don't think there's much that we're going to be missing out on.
All right. We'll leave it at that, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
All right. I will just say one last thing for those who are still listening. Thank you very much to all of you for being loyal Fantasy Golf Insider members. I wrote that in my article this week. We really, truly appreciate you guys staying on for more than a decade. Some of you have been on since the start, but being loyal members to us, without you, we wouldn't be around. So thank you very much. We appreciate it. We do bust our butts to get out content each and every week, and it's not always easy. But we do appreciate you being part of Team FGI always. So just know that. And with that, we will leave you with the Tour Championship this week. We'll be talking to you in a couple of weeks for, what the hell did I say it was? The Bitmore something or
yep.
other.
Yep.
And then the President's Cup the week after. But be sure to check us out on Football Insider Edge. We'll be loading that stuff up too. We already got stuff up there already. So, and then week one is coming up rapidly. So we'll be seeing you there as well. So with that, we'll leave you with the Tour Championship this week, and we'll be talking to you soon.
Good luck.